Thank you very much, Kojo. Let us first pray for our sister. She says she has a heavy heart. The Lord says, come unto me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and humble in spirit, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Let our sister take the Lord's yoke. Let us together pray for her before we begin. Father, we lift your name up. We bless you, Lord, that you enjoin us to come. No matter how heavy our burden is, you will take it and we will go back light because we have all our burdens lifted up. Oh, yes, burdens are lifted at Calvary. We are praying for our sister, Lord. We don't know the exact nature of her burden, but you know because you are God. Do lift it up for her and enable her through your Holy Spirit to cast it at your feet so that you will take it from there. We thank you for hearing us because we pray it in the name of Jesus. Amen. I'd like to thank the organizers of ANAVUC for the opportunity you have given me today. I'm also thankful to God for bringing this to pass because he works all things for his glory and for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. I'd like us to consider certain passages. Exodus 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, with emphasis on 21 and 22. We are not going to read that. Acts chapter 6, verse 3. Genesis 39, 1 to 6. Exodus 18, 19, verse 19, 20, 21, 22. That's the classic example of delegation in management. And it also spells out the qualifications for a manager, or a leader, if you like. Acts chapter 6, verse 3 also talks about the qualifications or qualities of a leader. But Genesis 39, 1 to 6 talks about Joseph, his qualities, and his knowledge and wisdom. And then Daniel chapter 1, verse 17, and also chapter 2, 17 to 23. Sorry. Daniel chapter 1, verse 17, and chapter 2, 17 to 23. Now, there are two. I'll go over very quickly. Exodus 18, 19 to 22. Acts 6, 3. Genesis 39, 1 to 6. Daniel 1, 17. And then 2, 17. To 23. Now, the two main passages I will use because they bear on Joseph and Daniel are the Genesis 39, 1 to 6 And then Daniel 1:17, 2:17-23. These two characters in the Bible, in the Old Testament, are known by many because they were men of integrity. They served in very high positions, and so justifiably, many preachers today use Joseph, some even give him a modern title, Prime Minister. And Daniel, Joseph, because of his integrity, because of his knowledge and wisdom, and his ability, God gave it ability to interpret dreams. And Daniel, again, because of his integrity, because of his ability to understand and interpret dreams. And note that these two always gave the glory to God. They did not pose as people who were wise by themselves, who were knowledgeable by their own efforts, but they gave the glory to the one who deserves it. But one other character who is not so used by Christian preachers is Samuel. Samuel was a seer or a prophet. He was a judge and a ruler of Israel. Because at that time in the history of Israel, a judge was also, if you like, a political leader. And I am enamored of Samuel because at the end of Samuel's career, he challenged the people and said, "There you are. I have ruled from my youth." We will look at that passage, 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1-5. We may read that. If you find it and you are bold enough, you can get up and read it. 1 Samuel chapter 12, 1-5.
And Samuel said to all Israel, "Behold, I have obeyed your voice in all that you have said to me, and have made a king over you. And now, behold, the king walks before you, and I am old and gray, and behold, my sons are with you. I have walked before you from my youth until this day. Here I am. Testify against me before the Lord and before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Or whose donkey have I taken? Or whom have I defrauded? Whom have I oppressed? Or from whose hand have I taken a bribe to blind my eyes with it? Testify against me, and I will restore." It's not coming. Okay. It is coming. Going on and off. Uh-huh. Okay. Testify against me, and I will restore it to you. They said, "You have not defrauded us or oppressed us or taken anything from any man's hand." And he said to them, "The Lord is witness against you, and his anointed is witness this day."
Good. I think, thank you very much. In spite of the technical hitches, you'll be able to give us the gist of what we want. Samuel challenged them, "If I have taken anybody's ox or donkey, or have defrauded anybody, if I have taken a bribe so that I would look elsewhere whilst the wrong thing was being done, or I'll give an advantage to somebody, let the person speak. And if there is such a case, I will recompense. I believe that this is the example for every Christian who finds himself or herself in leadership position, especially in public life, but also in our churches. And we will see why this is important. We're going to talk about a system that you know of, the civil service. Many are those who think that civil service, civil servants do nothing, and they are paid for no work done. And I remember years ago, Andrew Loco and I used to tease each other. He thought that we were doing no work. And I told him we worked harder than they in the private sector. But the point is that the civil service has come from centuries. We trace it back to the Roman Empire, where leaders appointed a group of people to carry out the daily tasks on their behalf. And over the years, it was found that Imperial China also had that system. So it is a system that comes to man naturally. A group of people are in authority. They realize that they cannot by themselves carry out the daily activities. And so they engage people a little lower down there who would do the task for them. But note that the power and authority remain in the hands of those who engage them. Those, the agents who are appointed this way, have no authority on their own. They act on behalf of those who appointed them. They do not take their own decisions. They take decisions that have been, if it is from them, approved by those who appointed them. Now, in the time of Imperial China, a new system was evolved. Engage agents. But whereas before then, these were appointed by inheritance and political patronage, the Chinese decided to organize a system where you test people, and no matter their background, if they proved intelligent and highly skilled, you would engage them. So it was, in fact, the Chinese who brought the idea of meritocracy into the system of government that you call the civil service. And so later, the Europeans, particularly the British, they found that this system had given stability and efficiency to the Chinese governments. So they copied it. And so now it is most people think that the idea of a neutral civil service based on merit emanated from the British. It came from the Chinese. When the British copied it, the European friends also, the French and others, saw that it was a good system. Have a group of people who are recruited on merit, regardless of their background, come and work for us. And they performed the best because they were much more intelligent than the previous people we had been engaging. We inherited this system from the British, that you have a core of people, well-educated, like the British system. In fact, one of the reasons why the British system worked so well was that both the politicians and the top civil servants, mainly from the administrative class, you call them, were from the same background. They went to Eton, they went to Oxford or Cambridge. So they had the same mindset, same understanding of issues. And because they were of the same background, they had respect for each other. Now, I'm giving all this background because it is important that we know, and it is going to affect what I will say. I'm not going to bear it all as it were, but I'm going to say as much as possible to show God's grace and favor, because I remember I took an oath of secrecy, and I took an oath of allegiance to the state. So it's not everything that I saw or heard that I can say, or even smelled that I can say. But, and therefore, there are things that I will give descriptions of, but not go into such detail that you might be able to make a good guess. But I want to stress that whether an individual is able to take integrity into public office and maintain integrity in public office and come out with integrity intact depends on a number of factors. Number one, the way the person's appointment was made. Why is it critical? We know that many people in this country, and all of the world over, lobby for positions. And in this part of the world, Africa, where there are not so many good jobs, and people who have gone up to a certain stage find themselves literally marooned after retirement and so on. Sometimes they are close to retirement. They want to get a comfortable position. And so there can be intense lobbying. And heads of states and government of this country and people in certain positions have known how this can be intense. By the time they wake up, there are people lined up waiting. So some go on all fours seeking to be appointed to one office or the other. Sometimes it is not a particular office they want. So literally, you send me anywhere. I'm prepared to go because we know what comes with such appointments, the perks in the office, and so on. The respect that often goes with it, even though sometimes undeserved, and even the title honorable, sometimes not so honorable, but we call them honorable. The lobbying is of two types. One, you get people to do it on your behalf. You know somebody who is close to the president, his relation, his friends, his party chiefs, and so on. If you convince them that it is in their interest to have you there, they might intensely lobby for you. But sometimes the individual do the lobbying themselves. That is where early morning by 5:30, 6 a.m. they are there to see the rising of the president. They may be there until the sun goes down and the president retires. And the importunate judge, we know the case, by dint of harassing him, he may decide to give you something. Sometimes we walk over others, we pull them down and walk over them in order to get to the positions. But the reason why it's important is that the way we get to the position determines how we can be men and women of integrity or not. If you lobbied to get the post, the one of the people who did the lobbying for you, or if no, they will come for their payday, because they put you there and they will come and demand that you should, you know, do them the favor they are requesting. And sometimes, and most often, you may be bending over backwards to do it. And if you did the lobbying on your own, the same thing, the person who gave you the appointment will come and say, there is this job, a small note on a piece of paper, and this contract must go to this person. And so, whether there's a bid or there is not, whatever it is, you must work to give the contract to that person. A note, appoint this man to that position, or this woman to that position. And you will have to agree, because you know how you got there. So that is one thing. I thank God that when my appointment was coming, I did not have a hand in it. I had written at the point that the then Mr. J. Kufuor won the election, I had become worried about the civil service. And I wrote a number of papers and distributed to some top people in the party that was coming into power. And I said, look, you need to do something about the civil service. It is the machinery that can help you achieve. If you neglect it, you will not do much. I know for a fact that only one out of the six or so that I distributed the paper to read it. Nothing happened for some 3 months. And I wrote another paper. Again, nothing happened. And I wrote again. And then this gentleman called me and said, look, I mean, I've known you for a long while, but I didn't know you have so much knowledge about the civil service. How did you come by all this? And I said, well, I was a civil servant and did my master's on the Ghana Civil Service and my doctorate, a comparative study of Ghana civil service with that of Great, that of the UK and that of France. So then he said, well, but it shows from what you were making reference to this reform and so on. Are you prepared to come and help us as head of civil service? I said, no, I'm not interested. So his wife also called me, put the same problem to me. I said, no, I'm in a good job as a consultant, and I'm comfortable where I am, and I know how much public service is so inglorious. But they said, okay, what can you do? I said, I'm prepared to be an advisor to the head of the civil service. Unknown to me, this gentleman wrote a memo to the president then, and it went round and round and round. And eventually they called me and said, look, if you come as advisor and the person you are advising does not take your advice, what do you do? I said, well, I leave it at that. They said, no, your ideas are good, so we want to use them. So why not come for a while as head of the civil service, a substantive position? I said, okay, fine. I'll take it and help my country. So I went there not feeling desperate that I needed the post. And I think that it showed in some of the things I did. So having taken the position, I thought that we must start the reforms. And so the first thing I did was to meet my chief directors. And he called a meeting for 10 a.m. I got there at 20 to 10. None of them was there. 10 o'clock, a handful. 10:10, all this time, my lieutenants were pleading, oh, boss, they will come. Can you wait? I said, look, I have called a meeting, and they must be here. So 10 o'clock, 10:10, they are not here. We start the meeting. So there, I announced that the next time I call the meeting, any chief director who was unable to attend should first call the office and ask for permission. Otherwise, they should be there by 10 to 10 for the meeting to start at 10. I am not to wait for them. They must wait for me. So we established it, punctuality. And that, I thought, was crucial. I went on the regional tours, went from Wa to Bolga to Tamale to Sunyani, Kumasi, back to Accra, Ho, Kufuredua, and so on. In the north and northern regions, I was given the Batakari, which I didn't think was a bribe. Because the whole group gave me, and the Civil Servants Association, they all came together and gave me. So I accepted. And then we agreed on the reforms. What happened thereafter is another matter. But what I'm stressing here is that because I was not, my heart was not attached to the position, I took certain decisions that ordinarily people don't take. One area was posting in the civil service, what we generally refer to as transfers. When I took office, I realized that there were some people who had spent years in the same department, had never moved. I said, we're going to do a mass transfer. If you spend 6 years or more in a position, you are going. It was reported to me that some said they wouldn't go. I said, fine. There's no argument about that. So started with the directors. Then they all moved. Then one minister said he was not going to allow his man to move because he needed him. And I hadn't informed him. I said, fine, I'm sorry I didn't inform you, but look at the civil service law. It says clearly that the head of the civil service is the head of all civil servants. And he has the power to move them. It doesn't say in consultation with, though it's nice if I consult you. So he was still adamant. He kept the young man. I said, fine. I got my chief director to write to him and say, if by the end of this month you have not reported at the new position, first you will lose your salary and other sanctions will continue. The next thing I heard, he had moved. Then another minister said his secretary was so efficient, so effective, there was no way he could do without her. He said, but you have been there 3 months, and you worked with this lady for 3 months. How can you say she is the most efficient, the most effective, the most blah, 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 blah? I said, fine. If that is your concern, I'm giving you a secretary, equally efficient, equally effective, and you will not miss this one. Still, he wasn't happy. Then he went round and round and round. He made a kululu with the minister where this one was going, and the minister sent her back quietly. So I got to know. So, same tactics. If you don't go back, doesn't matter what the minister said, you will lose your salary. So then the minister went and looked for some elderly man, extremely respectful in a certain position, to come and plead with me. And this man came. I believe he had given him the minister the assurance that, oh, I will do it, so don't worry. So when I told him, he looked so dazed. He looked dazed. And then I didn't know at the time, but I learned later that for trees, when somebody comes to, take refuge or come to plead, you go and intervene and it doesn't work, it's like the man has given you a slap in the face. I think he felt that way. And when I saw him leaving my office, I felt sorry for him. But he was saying, look, if anybody asks you, you can say that I said, let's go back home. I go and sit at the radio station. And when they ask me why I changed my mind about this particular person, I'll say, for instance, that my senior brother, His Excellency Professor Atukwu Okan, asked me to do it and I did it. Oh, what would people think of me? So it didn't work. Another minister dismissed a senior civil servant without my knowledge. And when he had removed him, then he came to me that I should look for a place for him. I said, oh, where do you do that? In the first place, you don't have the authority to do it. And I'm there to help you. If somebody has misbehaved, I'm not going to support the person, you know. So what is the big deal? Another one told me that a civil servant working in his ministry had misapplied quite a huge amount of money. In those days, it was a billion cedis or so. And he wanted me to effect a transfer. I said, no, wait a minute. If this person has committed this offense you are talking about, then it's not a question of transfer. It's a question of setting up a committee. We probe the case. If the person is innocent, we declare innocent. If the person is guilty, we sanction that civil servant. But we don't leave the person in the system with a mere transfer. So, brother, just write a few sentences that this person is suspected of having misapplied funds. Don't even state how much. We'll take care of that. No, I can't do it. I want you to quietly transfer. I said, don't do things quietly. Because you see, when I move the person from your ministry to another ministry, if what you say is true, then you are free, isn't it? But it remains my problem. Because whether I'm ministry A or ministry B or ministry Z, it's my responsibility. So me, I haven't solved the problem for myself. And then he fled up. Yes, I was told you wouldn't do anything about it. You support them. I said, I haven't said I won't do anything. I'm prepared to act, but just give me this short letter and we will do it. He didn't write a letter to complain about the misapplication of the billion funds. He wrote to say that the person was not qualified to work in the ministry, that particular ministry, because of a particular qualifications. I gave my letter to my people. They went for the fire. They looked. Lo and behold, the person had two previous qualifications before the one he was referring to. So that one was even additional. The person had the solid qualifications. So I just wrote back that that was the end of the matter. We ended it there. But I said, there were instances where reports were received about civil servants for malfeasance and all that. And in each case, we set up a committee to investigate. In one case, the lady in question ran away from the country before the work was concluded. But we still dismissed her. There were other cases where I had the impression that the people who worked on the committee, they did some kululu, because they came back with a no verdict. You know, something, they whitewashed the case, so no action could be taken. But my point had been that civil servants will be protected from the harassment and undue punishment from politicians. Because in this country, this is another background, we don't practice what was transmitted to us by the British. With the British, no politician can attack a civil servant. No. If you do, it's considered as hitting below the belt. On the contrary, it is the politician, like the minister in a particular ministry, who will defend his permanent secretary in parliament if issues came up. Why? Because the British accept that since the man or woman is not present in parliament, you should not and cannot answer back. You should not be criticizing him in parliament. So if such a situation arose, it is the minister who would defend the individual. But here, it is not so. A minister can say that I didn't achieve my objective because my civil servants are undermining me. They are doing all the rubbish. They are dragging their feet about implementing. So I realized that there was a need to protect civil servants. But when they had been found in difficulty, when they have been found guilty, then we would work on them. So I realized that the way you came in determined the way you operated. If the position is so important for you that you want to keep it at all costs, then you are likely to get into trouble. Because you want to keep the position, you'll do anything for the powers that be. I must say to the credit of the administration that neither the president nor the vice president, no, let me qualify this, neither the president nor the chief of staff ever made any demands, let alone unfair demands. In fact, in one case, when I was sacking the GFA from a building across the street, you know, it belonged to the civil service. When I took office, I was told that it had been given by my predecessor to the GFA for 2 years, and they had occupied it for 5 years. And I said, I'll take it over. So I wrote to them to give us back a building. They pleaded for more time, so I gave them 6 months. After 6 months, they still wanted to stay, and I said no. And I wrote to them and asked them to quit. Eventually, they did. Later, I learned that they had gone to see the chief of staff to intervene for them. The chief of staff said, "Ask for this man." So this boy is an EY. If he says you should go, just find a place and go. So I didn't have any of those difficulties. The difficulties I had were with individual ministers. When it comes to corruption, I think, again, when you go to an office with the idea that you can be rich, then you are going to find problems for yourself. Then you are going to consider everything in terms of what is in need for me. But I believe that as Christians, we know that we are to serve our masters as if we were what? Serving the Lord. And so there is no question of going there to amass wealth or to prepare for the future. My future was my present. In fact, sometimes I behaved as if I didn't know there was a future. At one time, I was invited by the African Union in my personal capacity to be on the panel to interview those who are going to be recruited as directors for the African Union. It was moving from Organization of African Unity to African Union, and they decided they wanted new directors. So I was invited as a member of the panel. So I went, and I thought it was going to be 2 weeks, and it dragged on 3 weeks. I wrote to ask for permission to stay on for 1 week. And then at a point, I saw that it was going to take a longer time. The money was good. It was good. I think what I received in a day was perhaps more than what Ghana gave me for a month. And so when I came back, they wanted me to return for, and those who stayed on for 4 more months or so. The foreign minister then, the MPP presidential candidate, Nana Akufo-Addo, he was there at one point, and he said, I should stay on for Ghana's interests, Because if I was there, I might help bring in Ghanaians into those positions, so I would be serving Ghana. I thought it was reasonable. But then I came and the work here was so much, I felt guilty. I would leave and go and stay in Addis Ababa on this panel. No, and besides, there weren't too many Ghanaian applicants also, because for some reason, the Public Service Commission hadn't advertised the positions in our daily newspapers. And all other African countries were coming, and Ghana, we had only one or two. So I decided I would sit. And then he went and spoke to the president, and then later on at a big meeting, he went again and told the president that I needed to go. The president called me. When are you leaving? I said, Your Excellency, I think I must stay. I stayed. And like I said, I lost so much times, 30 times 4. But I believed sincerely that I was doing something for this country, and that the Lord's desire was that I should be there. So what you expect from the position and what you are prepared to do to keep that position, I felt that I was doing a job that I believe was important, but any time that my appointing authority was prepared to let me go, I would go. So in taking decisions, I did not look left or right. Once I was sure in my conscience that what I was doing was right, I went ahead and did it. What else is critical in these positions? I have mentioned some in passing. Commitment. Commitment to the work. The conviction that you are doing a job that God Himself has entrusted to you, and for which one day you will answer. And sometimes in more detail than you expect. So that conviction is what takes you through and keeps you from indulging in a number of activities that you see around. But believe you me, the pressures are huge. Pressures from family members. Remember, one cousin came to me one day, said, he described the situation. It was clear he had stolen something from his employers. And he said, the police said he should go and look for a top person who is a member of his family to come, and when the person comes, they will release him. He said, me, I'm busy catching thieves here. And you want me to go to the police station? Because it was clear the man had stolen the item. How do you go for an item from a department on a Saturday afternoon when you don't work in a department, that particular department, and you say you were taking it for repairs without the knowledge of the head of that unit? I said, no. Go and sort yourself out. But you know that in our system and society, it is not. Many of us here might do it. Just go and sign something so that a member is, if his name goes into the papers, it will soil the family name. That is the argument we use. A very close friend of mine, a classmate from class one, he unfortunately had not been able to put up a building, so when he retired, he was still in the official bungalow, and after 3 years, the ministry thought he should be ejected. Again, he came, Can you plead with the chief director to allow me to stay on maybe one more year or 2 years? He said, well, how can I do that? I've written that those who have retired and are still in government bungalows should quit. The same person will now write to a chief director or call him and say, look, this is my bosom friend. And so allow him. You know, but these are the things that we find in our society. If you don't do it, and I know that some people may bear me a grudge, this cousin, I'm sure he and his siblings might be bearing me a grudge, but I'm clear in my conscience that I cannot allow a person, if he goes through the courts and the courts free him, it is their problem. Justice Lampe and Justice Aiti, am I right? It is your burden, not mine. But to go and have him released because he's my cousin and go and tell, no, I can't do that. Then there is the issue of values. What are our values? Do we have any at all? How much seriously do we take what the Lord says that he has prepared a place for us? I go to prepare a place for you, and where I am, there you will be also. How seriously do we take it? Do we believe it? If we do, then I the Americans will say, I have news for you. The wealth that you find being flaunted around will not attract you if it is not of legitimate origin. That all your friends are doing it. You know, they're all doing it around you. And so you think, me too, why not? No, because after all, you are considered more of a fool if you don't do it than of a wise man. You are not smart. You are not smart. But I tell you that after you've gone through all that, you will not have it easy. You don't have it easy. Because when you are on the salary, I don't know what the salary is now, but on that salary at the time, and you retire, it's no joke. But I believe that the Lord prepares for us more adequately than we realize. When I retired, I decided to go and spend a few months with my kids in the U.S. and the U.K. I went and came back. Then when I came back in July, was it June or July, I wrote to the AU that I've now retired. They had been looking for me before my appointment. So I wrote that I'm now free, a free agent. Within 2 weeks or so, a reply came. They needed me immediately. I should come for a consultancy. So I went for 6 months. And I came back. I came back and I went 3 times or so on short assignments. Then I finished those assignments. And then I was just here one day, I got a telephone call. A lady, she said she was speaking from Addis Ababa, that they have an organization in Arusha. They wanted me to come as a consultant. And the long and short of it was they wanted me immediately. And I went. When I got there, believe you me, I had never heard the name of that organization until the lady called. Even when she called, I couldn't retain the name. It was African Court on Human and People's Rights. based in Arusha. You never heard the name. Now you ask me, how did they get to give me an appointment? I hadn't applied, of course, because I had never heard the name. So I prepared and went. When I went, after we started working, there were five consultants from the five sub-regions of Africa, and I was made the leader. As we worked, I got to learn that our names were given to the authorities of the court by somebody in Addis Ababa who was the assistant, special assistant to the commissioner, the chairman of AU at the time. And it was interesting because I had had occasion to rebuke that man. He did something. And I said what he did was wrong. And I told him to the face. And so when I was leaving, I went to say goodbye to him. But it was like, you know, two people who have bad blood. I'm leaving, you know. But I learned that he told the president of the court, I'm giving you these five names, but by all means, choose Alex Glover Kwarty. I didn't understand it. But then I saw the hand of God in that. That God's child will never go hungry. You know, that if only we will have a little faith to trust in his care and provision, he will do the rest. I chopped there, like our people will say, every 3 months they will invite me. For some reason, some work that should have been finished, we will do it, we will do interviews, we will recommend people for selection, and then they will turn it down, so there will be more interviews. No. And it went on and on. But brothers and sisters, what I'm saying is that when I worked there in that office, I didn't think about some of these things that have been a problem for so many. But I also realize that if you get there through other people's efforts, if you are there and afraid that any time I can lose my position, so let me please this one, let me please that one, even if what they are asking is not correct, then you are likely to be in trouble. And you will lose your integrity. And the very people who cause you to lose your integrity will turn around and blame you. When I took office, the whole ministry's area was chaotic. There were structures here, there were structures there. People had come to erect structures and were pounding fufu in the ministries. Hawkers and vendors, they hawked anything from sliced pineapples and watermelon to coats and ties and shirts and shoes. And they were daring enough to take them into the offices. How can government business be done under such circumstances? So I said, they are going to move. Then the journalists came, said, but where would they go to? I said, if I wake up one morning and I find somebody has put a kiosk in front of my house, am I going to think where the person will move it to, or I order the person to move the kiosk? Nobody gave them the authority to. So we gave them time, I think about 2 weeks, and it kept the van went around announcing, and they didn't pay any heed to it until the day came. That's the Noah. You know, that's what the Lord gives that example. When the people in Noah's time were told the floods were coming, and they didn't bother. I mean, how? Until the floods came. So then one good day, the AME guys and the police, they came and they demolished all the structures from the VRA head office up to the stadium, all the way up to this side and the Snake side. And Mrs. Nati, they used to say that I made it impossible for them to have lunch because all the people who sold food around here. Recently, I've been hearing one minister claiming that he did it. I said, fine, that's what politicians do. They claim all the credit. But they moved out. After 1 week, my people came around again. And those who were recalcitrant and who had come back, they were moved again. 2 weeks later, we did it again. And so, until I left the place, the whole place was quiet. People tell me, you go back and see. I say, well, me, I did what I could in my time. Now I have no power, I have no authority, I can't do anything. So, brothers and sisters, the Lord's power is able to keep. The Lord is gracious. One thing I can say in all honesty, I was not very prayerful at the time. I was so anxious to set an example in punctuality, in work, so that by 7 o'clock, 7:15, I was in the office. And I stayed on until about 8 p.m. and so on. But what I also remember is that brothers were praying for me. And I thank God for those brothers. I think the moment my name was announced, it wasn't only the Bukom people and a lot of people who were rejoicing, because some people said, hey, what the yala wicked, they are rejoicing in Bukom. One echo. I said, oh, wow. People who didn't know me and so on, but, you know, but brethren were praying for me. And I believe sincerely that was what kept me. They were praying for me. So we should not for one moment think that necessarily putting a Christian or a born again person in a place solves everything. Born again people have gone there, they have taken their bribes, all right. They have found a way to polish it and so on. Today, as we sit here in our churches, the traditional churches, the mode of getting to the leadership has become a different cup of tea. In recent times, we distribute chicken and live techie, and even I hear money. So one person was saying, why didn't you ask him when we are giving to you, where did he got the techie from? He's also full. Where did he get the money to buy techie and distribute? And that is what it has become. People do it to get into positions, not to talk about other dark things, you know, because we did some work for the EP Church of Togo, the management audit, and what we found was really startling. You know, the members of the church will tell you, as for this Osofo, he's got something under his bed. We know it. Others will tell you, this one, we know his mistress. We can take you to his house, to her house. So there are all sorts of things are happening in our churches. So we should not assume that a person gets there is born again or claims to be born again, and therefore all will be well. It is when the person gets there with the Lord's guidance and stays with the Lord that he will remain with his integrity. A younger brother of mine came. He had been bypassed for a post which should have been given to him some years earlier. Then, finally again, the name had been presented a couple of times. No decision is taken, and then something happens. But this time he came and said, look, somebody has come to see me and said he was prepared to take me to see this big man in the ruling party. And that if he takes me there, I'm sure to get the post. By God's grace, this is a brother, a Christian. I said, well, it is good. But what do you want from this position? Do you want to be there on your own strength, or you want the Lord to lead you into that position? If you want the Lord to lead you, then when you get into trouble while you are there, he will rescue you. If you go on your own, you use your own tricks to get there, when you are in trouble, they will steal you alive. Choose. By God's grace, he chose not to follow this person to go and see that big man. He didn't get a job, but he's got something which by any stretch of imagination is far better than what he was gunning for. If he was the head of that institution, I'm sure by now they would have found a pretext to kick him out. He's been sent outside and receiving a salary where he is. And every time he comes around, they are pleading that he should come and take up the job because those who are doing it are not doing a good job. I said, don't pay any attention to them. They are the very people who will undermine you when you come. So, brothers and sisters, I think that the Lord is able to put us in places when we trust him, and when he is the one who leads us there, and when we get there in his power and we follow him, he is able to preserve and to keep our integrity. We cannot get it any other way. May God bless each one of us. Wherever he puts us, make us faithful. Amen.
Honorable brother, you said you were made to take an oath of secrecy and an oath of allegiance. Did you find at any time that they conflicted with your Christian beliefs, those oaths and the etc.? And if they did, what did you do?
Thank you very much. With the oath of secrecy, there is no problem. What you see, what you hear, maybe what you smell, what you touch, you are not to disclose to anybody. I think in the American system now, then they allow up to 25 years. And you can then reveal them. And the American society has even become such that you can disclose them before the 25 years. Because people are ready to buy and sell and make the money now. With the oath of allegiance, is the oath of allegiance to the state. To the state. And the state is represented by the government in power. So what it means is, assuming it didn't happen in my time, but assuming the president wanted me to do something which would be contrary to the interests of the state, I should be able to say no. I cannot. In many of these things, I've been talking about politicians, but I usually paint them with the same brush, so don't bother. That they're human beings like us. And it gets to a time they want you to do something which will be to their advantage, but they don't want anybody to know. Which is, you know. So when we joined the civil service, we were told that if your minister calls you and gives you instructions which you know are contrary to the interests of the state, or they are clearly against the laws of the land. And usually they will do that to young officers. They will not call the principal secretary in those days. They will call a young officer and say, go and do this, go and do that. The first thing they ask you to do is go and report to the principal secretary. And then put it in writing that, sir, you instructed me to do this and this and this and this. And this. Please confirm in writing. That's usually the end of the matter. He will not want to put it on paper. And so you go scot-free. But if you go and carry out and the problem arises, the first instinct of a human being, we are told, is that of self-preservation. So he will preserve, he likes to preserve, he says, I don't know anything about it. So put it in writing, let him write back and confirm. And if you are wise, you make a photocopy and keep it. If anything should happen. No. You are not. Hey, my big sister is.
Well, we are a young country. Therefore, standards are not as they should be in many cases. And we know, I was a civil servant, I didn't reach as high as you got, thank God for that. That sometimes these ministers will go as far as even wanting to take somebody's life. And you, as a child of God, get to know about it. That's the sort of thing I'm asking about.
Oh.
Then on whose side will you be? You'll be bound by your oath of secrecy and the allegiance matter. So then what do you do? That's what I'm talking about. Not the simple, but I know that, you know, so many things. I didn't get so bad, you know, an attorney general one day. I said, sir, put it in paper. You mm-hmm. are my boss. That's mm-hmm. why I've written my memo to you. Mm-hmm. If you disapprove it, you write back. Fortunately, I got out. And I'm going to report you to the solicitor general. I said, but I got out before anything. But I mean, there are times that they really come at you to do something criminal. But because you've taken an oath of allegiance and the secrecy business, that's what I'm talking about. What do you do as a believer?
Well, by God's grace, I never had such occasions. I mean, that is extreme, you know, to want to kill somebody. Those occasions, maybe, I don't know, maybe they knew the person I was, and so there were things that I don't know were not brought to my attention. But those that I fought with, you know, I didn't have such occasions.
Right, thank you. I'm glad to hear Dr. Clover because I think I taught him when I finished my sixth form.
You are right.
I didn't know, but he recognized me when he met me at the public gallery in Parliament. And I followed his career with great interest. Now, what I have found about those people he spoke about, Joseph, Daniel, Samuel, and I will add Job, they had that integrity. In fact, their integrity was unassailable. Any time they maintained their integrity, and God himself, you know, commended Job for his integrity. In fact, without integrity, in fact, the whole institution will collapse. And that was what I learned as an officer in Parliament, went to the House of Commons. And the very thing they taught us was integrity. Mm. If you have no integrity, the whole institution will collapse. So you have to maintain your integrity. What I learned in the House of Commons that there's a Prime Minister's question at 2:14. And exactly that time, they will come at 2:14. I was wondering, are these people are disciplined? And if you have no integrity, you don't go and work in that place. So it is important that people should maintain their integrity. And in fact, if your integrity is strong and you behave well, the Bible says that the righteous is as bold as a lion. In fact, in my own experience, I had problems of, you know, people saying that you should join this party, this, that. I said, no way, we would do that. Our position is that we should remain neutral. And I tell you, if you do that, no matter your enemy, they themselves will come and say, oh, that man, you know, he will not do it, so forget about it. I had to deal with powerful people, but they have been trained to maintain integrity, and they were quite sure that this man will never compromise his integrity. And again, I also know that when you have that integrity and passion for your work, there is always commitment and diligence for your work. Thank you.
Doc, when you were appointed the head of the civil service, I was with the Ministry of Health. And there were a lot of transfers you did. You see, there was a massive transfer of officials from one ministry to another. And subsequently, all these transfers of these officials, they came back. Some were summarily dismissed, and then they were reinstated with a lot of accusations and allegations against you. There were a lot of insinuations about why you ordered the transfer. Some thought it's quite arbitrary. I was then with the Ministry of Health. Then it happened that the Controller Accountant General Department was massively hit with your transfers. There were a lot of staffs on the payroll. Some don't work, and then they are still paid and things. So it happened that they were dismissed from my. But subsequently, they were reinstated by the previous when Mills took over. with the allegation that they were wrongly dismissed or transferred. So with all integrity, I presumably thought something have gone wrong. I say this, we were trying to carry on with the reforms, and that reform nearly failed. So I'm wondering why should that happen, and what's your reaction to it?
You're talking about transfers within the Accountant General's and Ministry of Health. I think you ought to know one thing, that the transfer of departmental staff is not done directly by the head of the civil service. Those are undertaken by the departmental heads. So is the accountant, the controller and accountant general who will decide on postings within his department. And then when the Ministry of Health broke into Ghana Health Service, the same thing, Ghana Health Service would carry on its own transfers. So if you heard of accountant general staff being dismissed or being posted around, it wasn't from my office. We have what you call general staff, and they come directly under the head of the civil service. But to talk about integrity, and I think that is the important thing we must stress. You know, now other countries are doing very well. Very well. Botswana, for instance, they're doing so well that, I mean, there is no comparison anymore between Ghana and Botswana. Mauritius, you know, I visited Mauritius, the level of efficiency is incredible. There was going to be a Commonwealth seminar in Mauritius. When the invitation came, I indicated that I would attend. Ordinarily, my staff would take care of that, write all the letters and so on. Somehow, they failed to send a letter to Mauritius. So when we arrived, I went there with an officer. They had not got our names on their list. But they were there, fortunately. It was a Sunday. The seminar was beginning on Monday. The officials were there to welcome those who were arriving because you had to go mostly through South Africa, Joburg or Nairobi. So when they learned that I was the head of the Ghana Civil Service, they said, oh, yes. Within 45 minutes, they had an official car ready for me, and they told me that that was the car I was going to use throughout the period of the seminar. We went back. They had telephoned, secured a hotel room for me before we got there. And the day of the opening of the seminar, it was at a very funny time, 6:26. Yes. And it was going to be opened by the president. And as has been my habit, by 6 o'clock I was seated. And I was reading through the material. The next thing I heard, gentlemen, the president will be there. The president had arrived. No fuss, no noise, nothing. And the president started his speech at 6:26 p.m. What more do you want for efficiency? When we completed the seminar, the last event, the report of the seminar was ready for distribution. Everybody had a copy. The last meeting, the report was ready, and everybody had a copy. So you see that while we are joking, No, the girls will say one twangim lekutu. Eh? I think my brother can interpret that. While we are joking and we are losing all the advantages we had in 1957, others are moving on. Oh, there are many, many, many reasons. There are many reasons. I mean, the first one is that for some reason, the Ghanaian politician hasn't understood the role of the civil service. Well, I mean, if you don't understand the role the civil service is to play, then they cannot play it effectively, and you cannot keep them playing that role. The other thing is that look at the plethora of what they call public service now. All the public services you can think of in this country, with the exception of the Ghana Armed Forces, were part of the civil service. All of them, including the police. People don't know this today. And so you have immigration, you have whatever, AESC, SEC, all of these were part of the one body, controlled. The secretary to the cabinet and head of civil service was one person. Now that post has been split in four. The secretary to the cabinet, the secretary to the president, the chief of staff, and then the head of the civil service. So, from one position, you have four. And they now have all taken different spheres they are managing. Where did the idea of chief of staff come from? From the army, which a politician borrowed for whatever reason, we don't know. So you have four people doing what used to be one person's work. And all the, like I was saying, all the corporations and boards and authorities were all civil service. And why would they go on their own? Because you had more money, your salary increased sometimes threefold. You had allowances which you didn't get if you were still in the civil service. And then you had an empire to yourself. You know, so I personally don't know what has to be done for the public administration system in Ghana. All the monies that you hear of, huge amounts that are being, you know, embezzled and stolen, it's because these organizations have moved out of the civil service. They are not applying civil service rules and regulations, which made it so difficult for you to have access to even one person. Now, they can order, give me $4 million or $4 billion. I'm going to take the plane to go to Brazil. And the money is made available. I mean, can you think of that? You know? So,
thank you very much, Dr. Gova Kotin. You started by talking about your research work for your thesis and your postgraduate work. I don't know the content, but I believe where we are right now, we've completely deviated to what was a research work, which I suppose you felt was a panacea for our emerging civil service. First of all, I suppose that one of the weaknesses we have here is we don't publish our experiences like you are telling us. And I believe it will be very easy if you can dust your thesis and update it a little bit in the context of the situation we find ourselves in right now and see whether we can buy into it or those who matter can buy into it. Because from what you've been saying, I can sit down here and see that the current breed of people might not know the intricacies of the civil service job and the headship of it and how it is supposed to be. So we're doing everything haphazardly, and we never seem to be able to move forward. And I will also like to say that one of the most recent things which, in my opinion, has impacted very negatively on our integrity, values, and everything, is what is in it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you go, people you meet, their first mind, what is it in it for me? If they don't see it immediately, they will make sure that that thing doesn't
work.
And people will put it even up front when the business has not even started and doesn't know how it's going to thrive, that what that man sitting there is asking what is in it for it before he can even open the door for you to go. So our values and commitments, against the background of the fact that people are not telling us that this is contributing to our present, you know, situation, we will still maybe spend a few hundred years or decades to come out of a situation which will be a good model for development. Otherwise, really, I can't see the way forward. And I will want you to say that, especially when it comes to work that has been done, because people don't write. We don't write. Experiences like yours, they are stored up there. Sooner or later, it will not be there. So in my suggestion, I will say that let's write it. In fact, I sometimes see these little pamphlets all the pastors are publishing as books.
Mm-hmm.
We come to an advocacy, we step out here. I don't think it's a major research work, but they've put it in cover and they are even selling it. And I am hoping that, you know, people who are thinking differently from where the country is drifting to can also try from whatever angle of their expertise. If it's in administration, how we can bring it down. If it is in things like corruption, how we can bring it down and help us to reorganize, regroup, and see how we can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ted. I can assure you, I have been writing about some of these things. And I thought that by now I would be almost on the point of publishing. I have been greatly disturbed by the doom song. I'm not smart enough to, you know, in the past, you know, when I came to town during the morning and went home in the afternoon or late, I'd go and sleep, wake up, and do whatever I can, even from 9 to 11 or something, and then go back to sleep. Since this thing started, especially 24 hours without, by the time I get home, no light. I don't know whether, I hope I'm not making an excuse, but it's not been easy at all. Otherwise, I was hoping that by May, it would be with the editors. So pray with me. I even wrote an article on some of these things. It was ready for publication. And then something happened. I got discouraged.
Doc, looking at your story, you know, from the experience you gave, you entered your position at a ripe stage, if I should put it that way. I don't know if when you were growing up, you know, youth, you had an experience definitely to, you know, manage or be in positions like that. And if you did you make mistakes as compared to who you were when you're in your position and right now, and how did you survive? The reason I'm asking that is we, more or less the upcoming generation, were introduced straight from national service. Those who got into something close to the public sector were introduced into a system which was very corrupt, if I should put it that way. The very people who mentor you and train you and, you know, put you into positions to, in your little capacity, you know, it's very corrupt. So you find out that even from the onset, the start you get, the push you get is corrupt in itself. And then you find yourself going in a direction that you probably didn't expect yourself to. Like, the things you are saying now, you compare it to your little capacity and what you did, and you probably don't measure up to what you are talking about. And then you are wondering if there's a future for you, if you can grow in integrity, more or less, things like that. You know, so you probably... I probably had to get out of that sector into another sector, maybe a private sector, where I think I can operate in a more honest way and stuff like that. So basically, if you were to start more or less from a very younger stage in the public sector, and you had all these blockades and everything to your Christian life, you know, trying to be a man of integrity, what would you do? Would you stay in and fight it? And if you would, how? And or would you go out and try to be perfect? That's just a... Those are the questions I'm asking as you are talking right now.
Yeah, Titi, these are legitimate questions. I know that the pressure on young people is seriously huge. You know, because like you're saying, you see that all around you, everybody is taking advantage of a situation. One young person was telling me how difficult that she is in the private sector, how difficult it is, the struggles they are going through, and so on, and how much money you need to make to be able to look after yourself. And I said, look, you forget that we are in a worse situation. No, you were growing up, you thought that if I could, you know, just do an honest work, I retire, my retirement benefits and my pension will see me through. And your pension now, for many of us who worked with government, if I told you what I receive by way of pension, I'm sure you all break down and cry for me. Except again that God has made a provision that I least expected. A board or two here, not government, but private. Again, in cases where I just sit somewhere and I get an invitation. Again, one case, I didn't know about the company. Somebody called me and said, are you prepared to be chairman of this board? What is it? No, so on. So that's where I see the Lord's provision comes in. But it must be difficult for young people. When I was teaching at Ofanspim and Augustus, I was organizing afternoon classes and evening classes. It never occurred to me that I could charge one cedi. Those days, one cedi was too much. One person. For that, I just wanted my students to do well. And when I set the exams and they passed well, I was so happy. I didn't know. And they went to the O-level. It was all joy. But now, in some schools, I hear the people have established private schools across the road, and the teachers in the public school are also teaching in that private school. And so if you misbehave here and you are sacked, you know it's the same teacher, so why bother? No. It's hard for you guys, but this is where standing up for the Lord will mean something. You can go away, you know, like the son of a friend of mine. He's not a Christian. They were brought up in France, and they grew up there, and he got his degree. His parents were coming back home. He also came. He got a job with one of our big organizations. He says he can't stand the corruption. So he's left. He's packed and gone away. And that organization is one of the key organizations in this country. But he says he can't stand it. Coming from outside, he hasn't seen anything of the sort before. Everybody is grabbing. Everybody in the organization, from chief executive down to the messenger. Everybody. Now, I don't know how low we will sink before anything happens. But brothers, sisters, we need to pray for this country. And if need be, support action to stop some of these things. Maybe we've prayed enough. If we see people who are serious and want to act, let's support them. Because they are not afraid of our prayers. Because for most of us, our prayers don't even go beyond the ceiling. But if we were to act, we sit down and they announce that so much money has been squandered by a group, and we are just there. We are just there. I've said it before. A Senegalese friend of mine said, "But you, Ghana, I mean, you come here and no light, and you are not bothered. No water in Accra, you are not bothered." So, Prof, you should lead us up.
I have the. Is there somebody else? There's a last. I'll use my crutchy powers. Doc, is it true that some of the civil servants, they teach the politicians to cheat, to steal? Because they, when they come, they know seeing the person's face, he would like money. So he say, "Oh, no more. This place, you know, when you do this and so and so, they won't see, the controller won't see." And then, is it true? Because it looks as if, you know, they know, because, you know, it's like, so they teach them how to steal, and they also, having a mind to steal, they also connive.
It's a very difficult question. But the plain answer, an honest answer, is that some civil servants lure politicians into it. I know of a few cases where the minister arrives and they knew that he has gone through rough times. That he would welcome some relief. So, the first weekend, the chief director organized, I think in those days, some 5 billion cedis. You know, "Oh, chief, this is for your weekend." How he was thankful. And then when it continued, and that was one of the cases that I dealt with. When I was moving that guy, he would not agree. He would not agree. He fought me, and we went the full hog, and I moved the guy. Soon after I left, he went back. And you see, it's very funny. You may have heard of a certain Alhaji Yakubu something, youth and sports, when there was this saga of Brazil, 4 million and so on. You know, with some fights, I moved him from youth and sports to a Greek. As soon as I left, he went back. So I had been wondering, youth and sports is considered a poor place. So why would this man fight to stay? And after I moved him, when my back is turned, he goes back. When this news broke out that they were paid, Ethan, the Black Stars, $90,000 or $85,000 appearance fee, he has also appeared. He sits in Accra and appears. And he gets it. So then I understood that if you stay in your office here in Accra and nobody suspects that you have access to any of these things, but for this breakout of the news, nobody would know that those in the ministry there are really comfortable. Imagine if you have it, they go for Africa, the Africa Cup of Nations, they go to a World Cup, each time the players appear, you appear with them in Accra. You see, why do you want to leave? You see, there are pockets of fresh fruits. If I hadn't become head of substance, I wouldn't have known that in the Ministry of Health, they paid themselves some monies. I don't know whether they still do it, but the doctors are supposed to be paid some allowances every month, calculated on the basis of how many extra hours they work per day. So they give, I've forgotten what it is called now. Sorry? What? No, that's not the term. But that is the idea. Because they cannot calculate how much each doctor, how many extra hours each doctor works, they have done a global thing which they pay to doctors. I got a shock when I got to know that everybody in the senior position in the Ministry of Health also gets it. So you see there and you think that, you know, it's so hard for them, and so they are laughing all the way to the bank. You see? And efforts to streamline those things, you come up against a wall. Because if you start, the doctors are going to complain because it's going to take a long time to really, you know, streamline it, separate them. In the meantime, shiansha, you know, the house is burning, so they must get it and forget about the others who should not get but are getting. You get it? Oh, it's a terrible situation, my brother. Thank you very much.